Parenting doesn't come with a manual, and when your child learns differently, there's no one-size-fits-all. Here, we think out the box. We celebrate every unique mind, every different path, and every win, big or small. Welcome to Out the Box, where kids and parents grow together.
Good morning, and welcome to Out the Box on 101.9 Chai FM, for minds that don't fit the mold, but hearts that keep striving. I'm Simone, mom, teacher, and literacy and dyslexia therapist. And before we start the show, I just want to mention again that the South African Jewish Museum is sponsoring Out the Box, and truly we couldn't have asked for a more appropriate sponsor, since they support all types of education in all types of areas. So if you haven't visited the South African Jewish Museum, please do so. It's wide, excuse me, it's eye-opening. High school changes everything. Children are expected to plan, organize, and study independently, but few are taught how. So they sit with their books, rereading and highlighting to an inch of the textbook's life. And to be honest, that's something that I could never get right. If you look at my highlighting, basically the whole page is in yellow. What do we do next to help our children? Because once they've been reading their textbooks and they've really been trying and spent hours and hours doing so, they then walk into an exam and everything falls apart. I have to mention that I follow a psychiatrist by the name of Dr. Russell Barkley on YouTube. And I really do just love him because he says it like it is. Barkley is a former professor of psychiatry and has written numerous leading books and research papers on ADHD and executive functioning. While he refers to the ADHD child, I believe that many of our own children are living in a world of constant distraction because of social media and the fleeting feeling of instant gratification that social media brings. And as an advocate for my own children living with ADHD and dyslexia, I feel it's important to note that there is a neurological difference that affects the way an ADHD brain learns. Russell Barkley asks the question, why can a child play video games for hours and continue to do so right through the night virtually, but struggle to do homework for 5 minutes? Think about that question, and I will continue with Russell Barkley and then our guest, who is going to open up what seems so unattainable.
Chai FM, your station of choice since 2008.
I'm Simone and you're listening to Out the Box. I was speaking about a psychiatrist by the name of Russell Barkley, who asked the question, why can a child play video games for hours but struggle to do homework for just 5 minutes? And the reason that he brings is that video games provide immediate feedback, constant rewards, and continuous consequences. Homework and exam preparation do not. Barkley explains that ADHD children are often unfairly labeled as lazy, unmotivated, having no work ethic, or not trying hard enough. But what I want everybody listening to understand, this is not a blanket discussion that we're having. Children are different. They're individuals. And ADHD affects the brain's ability to be self-motivated, especially when tasks like homework, exam preparation feels distant, repetitive, and even uninteresting. He reiterates that this avoidance is not about choice or power. It's about the brain needing more structure. Today, our guest, educational psychologist Karen Bachrach, is going to be helping us to understand what it means to be taught study skills, because it's such a vast topic that, in fact, I found it very difficult when I was researching what to focus on. Karen, welcome.
Hi, thanks, Simone. Great to be here.
And so lovely to have you back. You know, we're talking about what's behind poor exam results, what are study skills actually, and how do we support children who have no neurological challenges or learning barriers, and those who do. Karen, let's start here, because this comes up in almost every home: exam anxiety. Parents often say, my child studies but freezes in the exam. Even my own son says, Mom, I learned so hard, but when I got into the exam, everything just left my head. And I thought that was a perfect way of describing it. So can you unpack that for us? Is anxiety bad, or can it sometimes be helpful?
Fantastic question. And it definitely is something, anxiety is something that happens not only in the exam, but can actually be happening long before.
Right.
The students aren't the only one who get anxious. Often it's the parents who get very anxious, and their anxiety can drive the children's anxiety. But anxiety is not necessarily a bad thing. Stress is not necessarily a bad thing. There's an idea of two kinds of stress. We have eustress, E-U-S-T-R-E-S-S, and distress. So distress is the one that shuts us down.
Right.
Eustress can be something that can be motivating. And seeing how we can make, which possibly sounds an impossible thing, how we can make working for exams, preparing for exams, learning for exams, and actually writing the exam a positive experience can seem unattainable. But there are ways in which we can do it. And to bring in that sense of structure that you spoke about, that Professor Barclay talks about.
Yes.
How do we actually make things relevant? And it's understanding and internalizing the concepts.
And making it meaningful. Meaningful to us. That will keep us working and keep us trying to get the marks that we would like to get in a realistic world.
It's almost taking the concepts of studying and equating it to, how do I prepare if I play rugby or soccer or tennis or cricket, or I'm a musician or I'm a dancer? How do I apply that sense of structure, motivation, and dedication to working for exams?
And when you speak about anxiety, yes.
Yeah.
Well, when you speak about anxiety, my one son took himself off his medication in matric. That nearly sent me into orbit, because I thought, how can you do this in matric? This is the most important year of schooling. And his answer to me was, my anxiety helps me keep everything together. And I wondered to myself, well, how do you know when it isn't doing that? You know, he thinks that, and he argues that it is keeping his motivation and his dedication and his ability to sit down at certain times. He seems to manage his anxiety. And the medicine felt like it was sort of dulling that feeling.
So I wouldn't encourage blankets.
No, neither would I. I say that with a caveat.
It's very individual. It's very individual. Yeah. I think in terms of the anxiety being motivating, if you are able to put things in place and you are able to see that you are doing those things, that you can literally tick them off, then you know it's working. If
right.
you are actually achieving each of the, and working through each of the steps, that take you to the point of being able to write the test or the exam, if you're doing that successfully, then your anxiety is motivating and positive. If your anxiety is shutting you down, that is where literally you would look for something to hide under and someone can come and fetch you when all of this has gone away because it's just too much. So if one is then
it's
not
that
able
fight
to
and
implement,
flight, does that, is that
absolutely.
What we refer to, right?
Very much. Like you either can use it to motivate, understand that you're making like short-term sacrifices for long-term gain, recognizing that, yes, it might be that on Sunday you are going to be doing some work and you're not going necessarily out for coffee, going to watch a sports match or play hours of paddle or hours of gym.
Right. I've just had a WhatsApp speaking to this, Craig. Can you show it to me, please? Because I'd love to share it. Karen, before we get to the, you know, before we get to the WhatsApp, can we just go back to thinking about the anxiety as being helpful or as being a negative thing? So I get this WhatsApp and it says, as someone with ADHD, I find that I do function best with a reasonable level of anxiety. That said, the medication allows me to focus and doesn't remove the anxiety I need.
Then that's working for the person.
Right. So we don't, as you said, it's not a blanket, it's not a blanket rule that if you take yourself off your medication, it's going to be better for you. In fact, the opposite is that.
For many, yeah. So, I mean, I think that's a different show. But absolutely, I think stopping medication that one needs to be on can actually be very debilitating.
Right.
And counterproductive.
I mean, as you say, it is for a different show, but there is the discussion, and I will be having that with a psychiatrist,
yes,
about what you're treating first and why are you treating it. Okay, so
absolutely.
When a child says, my mind just went blank, and I'm hoping that my mind won't go blank right now when I come back after I've just read this note.
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
I'm Simone and you're listening to Out the Box 101.9, Chai FM 101.9 more specifically. And we are speaking to Karen Bachrach, an educational psychologist who has come to share her knowledge about how we help our children study better, not necessarily harder. So Karen, when a child says, my mind just went blank, that's not necessarily a lack of knowledge.
So what it is, it's listening to that negative little voice that we have and often we say, it's looking at a question and saying, I don't know this, they haven't taught this, I don't remember this. And so our brain kind of listens to that and says, I don't know this, I can't remember it, they haven't taught us, and goes blank.
Right.
In that moment of being in the test or the exam and you have the sense of going blank, something to do is just take a breath, maybe look down at your feet, see your feet on the ground, and then look at the question and see what in that question do you know? What are the triggers? Which is the word that links back to content and knowledge that you have learned, that you have prepared for? So there are a lot of steps that come before that moment, but anyone can have that experience of going blank. And it's learning to stop and literally in your mind say to brain, no, 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 you don't get to do this to me. I've got this. Because yes, I go blank in the moment and as I walk out of the test or the exam, suddenly the answer arrives.
It so often happens.
Why can I remember it in the exam?
Yes. It's that time pressure, I think, as well.
It's time pressure and it's what happens to us when we are feeling stressed and anxious in the exam. So if I can learn to say, no, wait, I've got this, brain, I can go back and see which parts of the question relate to things I know. And we often just need that moment of mindfulness where just maybe even touching the desk, looking at your feet, something that grounds you.
I like that you're using that multisensory way of touching, listening to something you can hear. Last year when I was scribing, Mrs. Bauer from King David, she's retired, she's the most lovely person, she would speak to the matrix before they started the exam, and she would do a breathing exercise with them, and she would ask them to think about something they tasted, something they heard, you know, something you felt. Put your hands on your lap and feel the pressure. And yeah. I just loved that, and I thought that it would be so beneficial to teach children mindfulness, mm-hmm. as you just said.
Have a positive affirmation that you can just say to yourself. If you feel that, I talk about the panic starting in one's stomach, moving up to one's throat, and then you're looking to run.
And your blood kind of drains from your body.
Just say, I've got this. I'm good. I've got this.
Okay. I think it takes a lot of practice, and I think that in the schools they should really try, as Mrs. Bauer did, teach the children how to do that. So maybe the question isn't, why is my child so anxious, but rather maybe it's, what is that anxiety trying to tell us? You know, that even though you knew your work and you're in this exam situation, as my son said, it just left my head. And how to come back, as you said, to calm yourself, to pause. If anxiety can help and can harm, can you tell us how healthy anxiety helps us in an exam situation?
So if we take it back a few steps, yeah, if we look at that sense of how do I use this sense of wanting to achieve, wanting to achieve the goals I've set out to do, then that can be motivating and that can be positive.
Right.
And that could be seen as a healthy anxiety, a drive to put things in place, as I said, to make the sacrifices, to literally understand that while there are some people who can look at work the day before, write the exam and do really well, majority of us can't. For the majority of us, whether there is ADHD, whether there isn't ADHD, barriers to learning or not, learning can be a very lengthy process. But it's something that happens in steps. It's not simply just looking at something and saying, okay, I'm ready to go and write
Correct.
The test or the exam. It's understanding what is involved. I think what's also really important, and this is where that anxiety can become debilitating, is if what I'm setting out to do, if expectations, both my own, perhaps the parents as well, if those expectations are unrealistic, that can become very, very overwhelming.
Yes, so because the child feels that they have to achieve for their parents, or maybe they have someone in the family who is, you know, who is able to achieve the marks, but they're not. Right. And I think, like you said, for their self-esteem and their confidence, we really need to be careful of that.
So it's about setting goals and working and including how I'm going to work, how I'm going to approach things. That's all going to support me in that moment in that exam. Is going to either make me go blank and stay blank, or that might for a minute I'll be blank, but then I can actually draw on what I've worked on, what I've built up, actually like go into our brain and like retrieve those files.
I just want to address a WhatsApp here so that the listeners, in case they didn't catch who we're talking to, we're speaking to educational psychologist Karen Bachrach, and the question is she in private practice? She is in private practice, yes. And perhaps at the end, we can just WhatsApp you her contact details if you so require. Apologies, Karen.
So I think that starts almost like at the beginning of a term. And I think it's important not to look too far down the road, to look at slices of time. Mm. If I look too far down towards the end of the year, that can be so overwhelming. Mm. I'm going to go and hide literally under my couch and everyone must just go away and leave me alone.
Or can I interject there? Or a child like my son who has ADHD thinks it's never going to happen. So he procrastinates and it seems so far away. Don't worry, I'm just going to get there when I get there.
That fits into everything. That almost like in inverted commas, a time blindness.
Yes.
Like not being aware of time. But all of us, you said earlier, our days are so busy. Our days are so busy. Our days are so noisy. There are so many distractions around us. So it's both planning on the one hand, understanding the reality. Exams could be in 3 weeks' time, 4 weeks' time. It's being aware of that. It's being aware of the date down there stays down there, but I move up to that date.
Right.
But still looking at the set of exams that are coming up now, not the end of the year.
Okay, so now the children are writing mini prelims, right? They're two or three exams in. When did that preparation start?
Some are writing mini prelims. Others have done those. We're talking about matrix. In general, grade 8s, some grade 7s, 8s up to 11 are going to be doing the June exams fairly soon. Mm. Second prelim starts August time. So the preparation and the working towards exams should be happening now. So for those students who are going to be starting exams mid-May, June, the matrix will be writing. Some are writing prelims now, but others are going to be writing June, July exams and then going into prelims. Now is the time to be preparing for exams.
Right.
It involves making the work yours. So we talk about summarizing. We talk about, you were saying, about highlighting and how much highlighting happens in a book. And I love highlighting. I really do.
But you love it because you know how to do it.
So it needs to be, how do I know what to highlight? Headings and subheadings are your links to your syllabus. They are the links that the textbook developers used from the syllabi documents, in terms of what needs to be covered. Those are your hooks. You need to keep a heading. You need to keep a subheading.
Right.
Because those are important things to link your knowledge onto. In terms of what content you highlight, teachers may have gone through that and have said, these are the things you need to highlight. And if you highlight it yourself, it's the question, it's like the words that answer a question, like a WH question words, the who, the what, the where, the why, and the when information. So that's a good way to look at highlighting. But the next step then needs to be, how do you make that information yours? How do you internalize it? And there are many ways to do that. It can be that you then write out a heading, subheading, and keywords. It can be that if there is some barrier to learning, someone helps you with that. Perhaps you say it and they write it for you.
So you and I were chatting about how we support children develop study skills. And I developed a card system because I found that if you asked questions and the child is required to answer it, they can then actually determine whether they understand the material or not. And those words, as you said, who, how, when, and where, which are your beginning words for the younger children, but it does get more complicated. It becomes contrast and detail and define and compare. And I took that, I did this for my son because we found that it was a good way for him to learn. And he could, it was chunk in chunks. The information was in chunks. Yes. Keywords were highlighted and there are full visuals on the cards.
Yes.
So you can tell us about the different modes of learning that are needed in a multisensory way, but I worked very, very closely with the syllabus that the IEB works toward or stipulates that the children need to know. And I also took into consideration the children who really do struggle with that higher executive functioning kind of answering technique. There are some children who can't access that. And I felt it was important to empower them with facts, particularly with history, because they may not always be able to answer the exact question, but they can show that they understand what they've learned in a basic way.
Yes. So there's stages.
Correct.
And those cards, which are absolutely amazing.
Thank you.
I think very, very helpful.
Thank you.
They've taken the content, they've taken the definitions, they've taken the terminology, which, if I can think about it almost like it's a pyramid, that's at the bottom. If I understand the terminology of a subject, if I know for certain subjects, definitions and terminology are absolutely essential. So if I can build on that, so I have either I've made my own notes or a fantastic option with those cards that you've developed is for the person to take that information, because making the summary is step one.
Mm.
It's at the base. Mm. Step two is then making that information mine. And I like to talk about teaching, in inverted commas.
Mm.
So if I take the information, whether it's my own notes or like the notes that in the format that you've put them in, or someone's helped me make notes, I take notes and then I teach it. So when I teach, I talk.
Mm.
In order to talk, I need to first think about what it is I want to say. So there's a cognitive component. I then have a sensory component of actually saying it. So lips, jaw, tongue, vocal cords moving. If I'm also have scrap paper or a whiteboard and I'm rewriting an important word.
Yes.
All of that is reinforcing information. But most importantly, I want to hear it. I want to hear my voice coming back at me.
Because I like what you're saying.
Reinforces.
And I like what you're saying is kind of having a partnership, either having a friend who you can study with, but with the cards, I also believe that it needs to be guided. So we don't want you sitting with the cards, reading it, flipping it over, reading the answer. We want the learning to be active. So as you said, using them in a multisensory way, but also the teaching of someone. And that is so pertinent, because if you can teach it, then
or something,
you understand it.
So it's not only teaching a friend. Some people work really well like that. It can literally be take a fluffy toy.
Oh, I love that, yes.
And teach it.
Yes.
Also often parents will say, but I tested my child and they knew their work, but they got to the exam and then they went blank. Often I say, have your child teach you.
Mm.
So it's rather than the parents doing the teaching or the tutor or the au pair doing the teaching, the child should be doing the teaching.
But also I think
in a multisensory way.
Yes. But also what's very important is being able, and I think this allays some kind of the anxiety that the kids are experiencing, those that are using the cards, is they say to me, I can put aside the cards that I know and revisit them in a week's time. And these cards, I know that I need to work harder on. When you mentioned parents asking their children, I don't believe that we're all equipped to ask the right questions.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And yeah. Certainly those higher order thinking questions.
Yeah. So I think at different stages, a parent might be involved, might not be involved. It can be it's a very difficult dynamic and become very conflictual.
Yeah, I dare
which
not.
Which is what you absolutely want, yeah. You want to avoid. You really want to avoid that. But in terms of, and you're talking about the higher order questions and the language that goes with higher order questions, that's essential in high school. And I think that's the difference from what the difference is moving from primary school into high school is high school saying to you, ask you a question, and then you have to actually prove that you know it. It's not just the straightforward recall. It is now proving how you know it.
So we've touched on planning, time management, organizations, and steps. We're going to come back to that, and Karen's going to unfold that even more for us.
IFM 101.9 megahertz of life.
Study skills, are these something that your children has got, or your child has got down pat, or are they struggling with it? We're talking to Karen Bachrach, educational psychologist, about navigating exams, tests, and how to approach learning for them. I have a WhatsApp from someone here. It says, "Hi, Simon. My daughter studies every day, but still underperforms. I don't know what she's doing wrong." How would you guide that the parent asking the questions as well as the child?
Often it is what is being done in the time that I'm studying. Am I able to work through each of the stages? So can I do the preparation? Can I move on to the learning? And then can I actually apply that knowledge to questions that have been asked? And an important part of answering the question and applying knowledge is to understand what do you understand and what don't you understand. And it's something you mentioned. The person can say, okay, I know this, but I need to revisit that. Mm. But it's like making a note, and it's metacognition. It's thinking about your thinking. Mm. So where is it that I understand that I needed to maybe add at this step, subtract at that step, but then I didn't know if I needed to multiply or divide. So making a note for yourself as you're going through a past paper, as you're seeing, can you answer the questions that are being asked, making a note about where are you stuck? Often we'll say, I don't remember anything, I don't know anything. And that's not necessarily true. It's about taking a step back, thinking about what do you understand, what don't you understand, and then having the consolidation, asking your teacher, going back to your original notes.
That's so true. When I think of a subject like CAT, it's a lot of terminology. It's a lot of learning, kind of not as much application, although there is application, but you really have to have the knowledge on your fingertips. And that requires a lot of learning. And that was also a reason I made the cards, because I chunked it and I made it into the types of questions you would be confronted with in an exam. Mm-hmm. The history ones worked very well as well, because if you were doing a past paper and you had a question, for example, why did the Black Panthers and Malcolm X disagree with the way Martin Luther King disagreed with the way they looked at protests and types of protests. And if you took the cards, you spread them out, and if you took them, you could actually put them out and then create your essay, because it asks the questions, contrast, compare, distinguish between. Those are those higher order thinking questions that you were speaking about.
Yeah. And that goes across all subjects. And having definitions at my fingertips, but also having the calculations for maths, lit and maths, the formulas, and that's for science and that's for accounts. And it's across the board. You know, even within consumer studies, there are different calculations I need to be able to do and to work out. So it's the preparation, it's the learning, it's the teaching, and then it's the practice.
Right.
And it's building that strong foundation rather than leaving everything to the last minute and I'm just looking over my notes and I've gone over everything and I've highlighted. I didn't do anything with it beyond the highlighting.
Mm.
That's where often that gap happens.
Yeah. It's got to be active. It has to be active learning.
Exactly. That makes you an active learner. And if I'm an active learner, I can then become the active exam taker.
Yes.
And there's studies that have shown...
Yes.
Yeah,
continue.
Yeah. There's studies that have shown that when I am actively involved in learning, so I'm writing or I'm teaching, I'm highlighting, consciously highlighting, not just colouring in, consciously highlighting. When I'm engaged with the work and I'm connected to it, more parts of my brain light up. So I'm using my extremities, literally more parts of my brain light up. When I'm passive, so I'm lying on my bed, I'm lying on the fat sack, I'm lying on the couch, brain says, chill time. So I think I'm concentrating, but I'm not.
Mm.
So yes, sitting at a desk is great, on a chair, sitting on a yoga ball and bouncing at the desk, if that is the stimulation I need. Maybe I do need to be standing up and walking around with my notes and doing the teaching.
And one of my clients actually said that she allows her child to write across the windows in her in her house. It was Tully Frankel. Yes. She comes on the show.
Fantastic.
And it's such a fantastic thing because you're teaching, as you say, you could have all your teddy bears, but you're writing at the same time.
Right. Also, I encourage clients to record themselves, like especially the definitions, vocabulary that they could need for an Afrikaans or isiZulu paper or for Hebrew, or terms and definitions they need to know.
Yes.
So a voice recording on your phones. And then when you are going for a run or you're at the gym exercising, listen to it.
Beautiful. That's a great idea. That's a great idea.
You just can't take it with you into the exam. That's
well, we hope you don't take it into the exam.
It's like we're constant reinforcing this. What the key thing is, it's taking the information and finding a way to make it yours.
Mm.
Because when I've made it mine, when I've internalized it, and that's the same for your history essays, and it's the same for your English essays and your biology essays, anything. When the information is yours and you've understood it, poetry, and you've internalized it, then you can use all of that to support you in your exam to answer the question that is being asked.
Right.
So,
you know, being able to unpack the question is so important, and therein lies the importance of highlighting what is this question asking of me.
Mm.
When we see the difference between passive and active learning, what does passive learning look like and what does active learning look like?
Passive literally is just reading over, not engaged, not internalizing it, not making it mine in any way. So there may be ways that someone needs to be supported in their learning. We need to look at using the amazing options we've got with technology to see how do I use that to enhance my learning and to help me remember my work. Maybe writing my notes myself, as we've already said, isn't the option, but at some point in time, I need to take those notes and I need to teach them. I can use, I think it's Notes LM, where I can take notes, upload them, and it creates a podcast for me. So that can be a way to
That's
reinforce
brilliant.
It.
My middle son did matric on YouTube, and he did very well.
Yeah.
But that's a child with a strong auditory memory.
My thinking is that to use auditory, to use visual, to use kinesthetic, to integrate all strategies rather than relying on one. Because when I answer that exam question, I need to be able to use visual and auditory and kinesthetic.
So maybe your child isn't struggling with the subject. Perhaps they're struggling with how they're learning it and then how it needs to be applied.
Chai FM, your station of choice since 2008.
You're listening to Simon on Chai FM 101.9, Out the Box. We're talking to educational psychologist Karen Bachrach. If you have missed any of the podcasts, you are welcome to go onto the Chai FM website and download whatever it is that interests you from my show and to various other shows. So don't forget that the podcasts are always available for you. Send your WhatsApps to 061-895-1019 or email me at sim@chai.co.za. Karen, before we move to keeping our children healthy during exam time, which is very, very important, can we just speak to the study schedule and having a certain amount of control of your learning? And I don't speak about kids with the learning barriers or ADHD. I'm talking about your regular child needing to create a study skill for them. Can you give us some ideas of, because study schedules were always elusive to me. I could never really work out how to create a study schedule. Can you explain what the best method is?
It can be really hard to do because it can be something I just procrastinate about, and I can be procrastinating in terms of rescheduling and rescheduling and rescheduling. But if I understand, so it starts with understanding what it is I want to be achieving, understanding what it is I need to be doing in each subject. So we've spoken about the definitions and the notes and the application, and I understand if it's like different stages. I love working on paper. I've got all the apps and all the reminders and all the everything on my phone. Nothing beats a piece of paper. I can feel it. I can see it. I can touch it.
Agreed. And that's why people who keep saying to me, why don't you put your cards onto an app? And I said, holding the card, reading the card, flipping the card over, is that tactile, kinesthetic, because you're speaking a way of learning. So you are absolutely spot on there.
So then a schedule, whether it's on a desk calendar or we draw up some kind of template on a page, it's about understanding where we are in time. And I think we've lost that. I think time just goes so fast and days just go by before we realize it, we're into the next week. So on a sheet of paper, have your Monday through to Sunday. Have a column where you put down what is it I want to be doing this week, covering this week, and that you need to work with the scopes that the school send out in terms of what's going to be covered. Put in, like, have a morning row, an afternoon row, and a night row, and your morning row is to remind you, oh, I need to have that ready at school, or I'm writing a test on that day, because dates are elusive and they disappear. I think also to put on that schedule, when can't you do any work? When do you have? When are you playing a rugby match or soccer match? Are you going to dancing? Or when are you choosing not to work? So you're choosing not to work on a specific evening, maybe a Friday night or a Saturday. Cross it out. So it's like, what do you have to do? When does it have to be done by? And when can't you work? And then you fit in. I'm going to do parts of speech on this day. I'm going to learn my CAT definitions on that day. It's about putting it on paper and ideally being able to tick things off. Because when you can tick it off, that's
a feeling
the power
of
is.
A feeling of relief.
That's the power.
I want you to speak very quickly, and sorry for the pressure, but Craig is telling me that we need to wrap up. How do we keep our children healthy during exam time, where they are burnt out and exhausted?
So I think good nutrition is essential. I need to be looking at low GI foods, carbohydrates to sustain the energy, proteins, vegetables, fruit, healthy snacks. Raisins, walnuts, which actually look at like your brain. If you look at a whole walnut, it actually looks like your brain. Dr. Richard Sutton talks about a piece of dark chocolate reinforcing memory. So dark chocolate is a great option.
I'm a
Cadbury's
girl. No, but you're right.
Dark chocolate, cutting down or cutting out caffeine, but just eating healthily.
And no monster drinks and
no energy drinks. They are really bad for you.
And for anxiety. Okay, Craig is waving at me. So, Karen, thank you so much for coming and sharing your knowledge and insights. And I always say that, you know, we have to have two or three more episodes just to get into the meat of what we're talking about. Before we go, I had a thought. Well, it wasn't my thought, but I found a thought from John Hattie, and it really, what I love is that it really speaks back to what Karen was saying. The biggest effects on student learning occur when students become their own teachers. And I thought that was just brilliant. So it's not about working harder. It's about working smarter and making it your own. Thank you to all of you out there listening and sending your WhatsApps. I hope you have a fabulous week ahead, and Karen and I will certainly continue this conversation. Thanks again, Karen.